Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Bye, Felicia. I'm so black, Christian. One day I looked at God with a side eye emoji, almost sold my faith to the highest bid when a black man compared my faith to slave purchase. Like my Bible pages are made of master's cashier receipts. Say all that dancing and shouting was just from the cracking of his whips. You can still hear his echo breathing somewhere in the back pews, telling me you can only be black or Christian. But they don't sway me. Just makes my faith tougher than scarred skin. Like the sun just makes my skin blacker. Their scorn makes my faith bolder.
I'm so black, Christian. I thought all black men were raised without fathers.
I thought all black men wanted to be fathers. Love their children with oakwood arms and flower-filled hearts. Their branches never wander into foreign gardens, but forge hedges of protection around their family.
Family, for some, is a word all too foreign. But some is not all. Not every black woman has to be bodied by statistics, forced to live with bruised heart, absent men and bastard children praying in war rooms alone.
I see young boy, pants sagging, dreadlocks knotted in rebellion, middle finger to cops, smelling like early morning marijuana, and I think to myself, is he not a candidate for the same grace that elected you? He could become black Christian, but not like the ones you like. Johnny won't sing the hymns you like. He won't fit in your box of bow ties and respectability. Will that make him any less Christian? I'm so black Christian. I am not every black Christian. We feel estranged when our experiences are not the same as other black Christians. But we are tapestries, threads of consciousness that do not match but intersect paths, trying to make sense of our Savior and skin. If Christ be fully man, fully God, I can be fully black and fully his. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard Flights and Feelings Airlines, Flight 1 with nonstop service from Chicago to Atlanta. My name is Joseph. I will be your flight attendant, assisted by our Atlanta-based cabin crew. We ask that you please fasten your seatbelts and secure all baggage beneath your seats or in the overhead compartments. We also ask that all your seats and tray tables are in the upright position for takeoff and landing. Federal regulations require that all smoking is prohibited on this aircraft. Please turn off all personal electronic devices, including all laptops and tablets. Download the next Flights and Feelings episode, and then please make sure all your cellular devices are on airplane mode as to avoid any distractions.
What's going on, family? My name is Joseph Solomon. I'm a singer, songwriter, poet, spoken word artist, YouTuber, lifelong student, ever doubtful or ever curious Christian, frequent flyer, blackety black. Welcome to the Flights and Feelings podcast, where we thoughtfully and vulnerably travel through faith, relationships, sexuality, science, health, and culture, via storytelling, poetry, and conversation. Yo, once again, thank you to all the good folks over at the Flights and Feelings Sky Club on Patreon. They have been a huge part as to why this podcast is still able to go on publicly. They have also heard this particular conversation you're about to hear between me and my good friend Preston Perry in its unedited, unabridged form. All right, this conversation that we had ended up being about an hour and 51 minutes. And some people want the longer versions of things. We also discuss those things through live streams on Zoom a couple times a week. There's just extra content in general, and it's been a great way to keep content going. So I would love to see you as a member of the Flights and Feelings Sky Club on Patreon at patreon.com/whatisjoedoing.
A lot of times when we talk about apologetics, we do learn apologetics from people in these white spaces, basically. Yeah. And I think one thing you see with in these white spaces is that when they deal with other worldviews, they have the luxury to deal with it solely from an intellectual, theological space, not a social space, right? Because I think in so many ways, as far as there's in white society, everything in a lot of times in the West has catered to white society. So when they talk to a Mormon, when they talk to a Jehovah's Witness or a Seventh-day Adventist or any somebody like that, they have the luxury to only talk about it from a theological or some philosophical or point of view. Yeah. But in our context, it's not merely a theological conversation. It's very much social. It is like a, so in a lot of ways, a lot of these black religions was fueled by white supremacy. So it's like, how do you deal with this?
They were reactionary.
Yes. Right. Yeah. And that's one thing I told to a Hebrew Israelite when I was talking to him last summer. And he was telling me, that I'm a slave to the white man's teaching. And I said, and then he began to give me all of these philosophical examples. And I said, these hypothetical examples, I mean. And then I said, well, let me give you a hypothetical. I said, if you erase what the white man has done out of the history of this country, do you still have a religion? And I said, and I wasn't trying to be disrespectful to him, but the reason why I raised that question to him.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
It's a very good question.
Yeah. But the reason why I raised the question to him, because I said, the reason why you have been able to exalt the black man as kind of God in a way, because you've made the white man the Edomite, which is the so-called devil.
Mm-hmm.
So if you erase what the white man has done out of the history of humanity, you really no longer have a religion. You no longer have an enemy. You no longer have, and I was like, so they let you know that your religion is not really based on what God has done, but what men has done. Mm-hmm. And I was like, so with that, I think we just have a different task as urban black apologists to not just approach it from a theological, intellectual space, but from a very social place. And so I think that's the reason why the black apologist, especially in the urban community, has a very detailed task ahead of him. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. And it's detailed and it's inherently, and when you say social, we're having, at this point, black Christians, not everyone, but I think to some degree in the past few years, considering the climate of our country, we've had to go through some kind of identity crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to figure out how you're going to respond to the identity crisis. It's like, am I really still on Master's plantation? Like, am I still carrying out his mission?
Yeah.
You know, you had to really think about that. What is my place in Christianity, if there is one for me to have at all? And Christians, man, this is great. Because like, this is where our two worlds sort of collide. I think I talked about in one of the early podcasts, having a faith that is future proof, going into the future. And can your faith be adaptable, should I say, to some degree, that's probably for lack of better terms, is your faith usable in the future? Will it become obsolete in the future? Because this is where we're moving towards right now. There's two things on the horizon for the black Christian, especially for the black intellectual Christian in America, is this. On one side, we are moving towards a very, very,
where we're already moving into a very secular society.
Yeah.
And it's like, do we even need God in the first place? Do we need specifically the Christian God?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any use for him when we have so much science, we have so much medical advance, and we're understanding the world in a different way that generations before us didn't understand it? And as we move into the future, God sort of gets moved further and further out to the outskirts along with all his followers, right? So that's on one side. But then another route that we're moving on as well is the calling out of racism and the uplifting of black and dark skinned people.
Yeah.
And of course, that can move in towards we're moving into very, very specific grounds of understanding the beauty of our identity.
Yeah.
So when you put those two things together, the black intellectual Christian is in a very interesting space where it's like, I'm the world is moving in a uplifting and a hyper attention towards race, and it's moving towards secularism. What am I doing as a black Christian in a secular space that while I'm in a faith that is so-called the white man's religion? Yeah. I'm in a white man's religion, and I shouldn't even be in religion in the first place. So absolutely, you're kind of like,
yeah, because I think you have those two separate spectrums. You have the people who have struggled with their faith because, you know, they feel like the Bible doesn't confirm science, or science doesn't really confirm the Bible. They feel like they conflict with one another, and they just in these spaces where they're thinking. And then you have these people, like black people. And so as far as the science thing, I've never really my faith has never really struggled. And I get this question a lot from people who watch my YouTube channel or listen to the podcast. They say, you know, Preston, is doing apologetics dangerous? They say, you know, they ask this question like, is venturing and learning about science and how it coincides with the Bible and learning about history or learning about other world faiths, is it something that can potentially drive us away from the faith? And I have to be honest, I never told anybody this. I never really struggled with the science piece, but I have struggled with the identity piece, with the am I serving the right God because of all of this stuff that's happening in my country, and not just in my country, but just people who I claim to the world are my brothers and sisters. It almost seems as if the Hebrew Israelites and the Moors are right. I've never really shared this story, but I think like 5-6 years ago, actually, I was writing a poem, Dear Mike Brown, when you was planning your event Canvas in Houston. And the Mike Brown situation when he got murdered, literally blocks away from where my wife grew up at, it just destroyed me, man. I was really heartbroken, and I wrote that piece. And after I wrote the piece, I put it on Instagram and I put it on YouTube or whatever, and just the reaction that it got from white Christians, like, really broke my heart.
What was the reaction?
It was. How do you know he wasn't a thug? You know, how do we know he wasn't guilty? And then a very popular pastor wrote a blog, and in the blog it talked about how he basically broke down that he reaped what he sowed. Mm. And so a lot of people kind of like sent that blog to me. And at that time I was witnessing to Hebrew Israelites in Chicago, a group of Hebrew Israelites called the One Westerners. And so me and my guys, we would go downtown, we would witness to them. A couple of them, well, not a couple, a lot of them was following me on Instagram at the time. And they came in my comment section and was literally mocking me and mocking the community that I'm a part of. You're like, this is the community that you're a part of? This is your brothers and sisters? The same people who are in your comment section saying this black man reaped what he sowed, this is what you belong to. And it made me feel stupid.
Mm.
So I was like, I literally sat up one night and I began to flirt with this idea that, man, maybe I'm in the wrong religion. I believe in Jesus. I believe that, that he died for sins. I believe that, you know, yeah, that he's God. I believe that he's, you know, probably, you know, more than likely a light brown man or probably darker. Definitely doesn't believe he's a white man, blue eye, blonde hair and blue eyes or whatever. But man, maybe, you know, black people do need to separate and claim something for ourselves. So maybe, you know, like, you know, God designed it for us to be oppressed, and maybe we might be a chosen people the way I'm. You know, I had questions in my head. I began to doubt, and I began to pray, man. And I expressed it to a couple of people, and I began to pray, and I was like, the Lord, like I have this truth in front of me, and I believe that these are my brothers and sisters in Christ, but I'm starting not to believe it, and you need to help me.
Listen, bro, that is a common experience right now for a lot of, like, a lot of black people have kind of gone through that. And I think that's where Satan would want to drive a wedge and really cause a lot of confusion. But I don't believe that all division is bad division. I think we've always assumed that you're creating division and they say it as a bad thing. I'm like, well.
I'm glad you said that, because it's not. But let me just tell you, I want to pick your brain about that, because I have some questions to you about that. But I want to tell you what God did when he answered my prayer. I had agreed before this all happened to go hunting with this man named Ray Orland, who's really a giant in the faith. He's a really humble dude, but like this man wrote a lot of the YouVersion Bible. Like this dude is a dope dude. He's a white man that lives in Nashville, and he invited me to go hunting with him. So I flew out there to go hunting with him. And in my time with him, God began to like heal my heart from the hurt that I experienced with my white brothers and sisters. And I remember him being in the car, and he began to cry and weep for the things that he saw on my Instagram and the things that he saw that transpired in my life. And he just began to apologize just for, you know, the things that my people went through. And I remember him telling me, like, as a white man, I don't have the answers. I don't know, like, why God is allowing this to happen. But this whole weekend, I just want to learn from you. I don't want to teach. I just want you to teach me. I want to hear you. And through, I think, the love that he showed me that weekend, God began to heal my heart with some things and began to show me, like, no, like, there are people in this community that don't understand where I come from, but they're willing to love me through it. And so I don't think if I had that experience, I don't know where I would have went in my faith. And I think that just shows you that in our wrestling, that if we're faithful to come back to God with our questions, like his Holy Spirit would do something that our intellect can't.
Yeah.
And would send us people.
Do you think that looks weak, though? Like, yo, this white dude is, or whatever, not Ray, but just anybody. I think black people have had that experience. We exist oftentimes more than white people. We exist in two different spaces very often, where we don't have to intentionally go into white spaces. We end up in white spaces, and we come from black spaces. But, you know, for a white person who are white people are doing this a lot right now, wanting to come into black spaces now and want to learn and all that. And it almost kind of feels like, yeah. Like, do you feel like that can be, like, from the outside looking in, it's like, oh man, they went and cried to you and said they want to learn and stuff. So you forgave them. Now you want to forgive everything. Like,
I think in some situations it can be. I think even with this George Floyd situation, I've said no to the last five white churches that reached out to me to do race talks, because I don't feel like it's you really trying to love on me. It's you. Sometimes I think, to be honest, it's people trying to save face, trying to, you know, get a black voice to speak to something that they've never spoke to. Like, this stuff didn't happen for a long time. Like, why do you want to get or whatever? But like, for him, he didn't want to invite me to his church. He didn't want to, you know, put me on this podcast. He didn't
See?
Wanna, He just wanted to bring me in his home,
yeah,
and to eat with me and to talk with me, and not just about race, but just he just wanted to learn from me as a person. He didn't treat me as his black man. Yeah. He treated me like a man, yeah, that was black, who, yeah, was made in the image of God. And I think that's the difference. And I think that's the thing that love does. Like, even if I have some, you know, even if I'm skeptical about white people, like if it's real genuine love, it's going to break down some barriers. And it really doesn't have to do anything with him being a white man and I'm being a black man, even though we can't escape it. And I'm proud to be black and Christian. But it's just like, man, like, I think love, the Bible is true. Like, love, yeah, conquers all things. Mm. And it conquered my doubt about white people.
Yeah.
At that time. So I think it is. So to answer your question about is it being weak, I think it can be. I think it can be a thin line between white people who really wanna learn and grow and be a student of black voices, but also, you know, people who just wanna, yeah, learn for a season and then just kind of go back to things, how things used to be.
Yeah, because the question to ask is now, you know, now that it's not really the height of the news at the moment, you know, or even a few months from now, if we go a good bit of time without people talking about or seeing, you know, a dead black body on video or something like that, is the concern going to be there? But again, it sounds like we're talking about, it almost sounds like we're getting off topic because we're supposed to be talking about apologetics, but we, like you said, it's such a social thing. You, yeah, can't escape that. Like, when we're talking about having doubt, man, when I see continually the way that black people have, it's not even just like a, we can talk about American history, whatever it may be, and the black person's space in that. But for a long time, black people, I remember Andre 3000 wore an outfit on some award show, I forget now, but it's like, yeah, I think it said something to the effect of, like, across history, black people suffer most. Why is that? Or something like that. I think, yeah, they had like an outfit. And it's such a great question. It's a
really great question.
When you think about even just the, like, I was watching a video on YouTube the other day about, you know, why some countries experience so much poverty and others don't. And then when you look at some of the world's most impoverished nations, if it's not in Africa, it's in some
other places,
some dark skin space, you, yeah, know what I'm saying? So it's like, dang, God, that can really raise some real questions. Like, dang, God, either we're the chosen people or we're the cursed people.
Yeah. Real talk.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it can raise a lot of questions. And so for black Christians, not to say that apologetics and the defending of the faith doesn't have something to offer everyone, because obviously it does. But there is a unique offering that it has for black people right now. Again, considering how secular we're moving and how much we are paying more attention to the plight of dark-skinned people. And it's like, as a dark-skinned Christian, and when you become more aware of the situation, you're like, apologetics is no longer... It's not just a philosophical or intellectual jousting, mm, or sparring. It's like, nah, bro. Like, my identity is wrapped up in this, in these questions.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the reason why so many people, I think, last seven years have left the faith and went to these black religions, because what they're searching for is an identity.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that one of the things that I think is that black people, and that's the reason why I wrote New World Christian, and I said towards the end of the poem, like, don't let Satan trick you, make you think the cross we bear as a people ain't beautiful, like God ain't got no crowns waiting for black craniums after we endure to the end. Mm-hmm. A day is coming when Jesus will swoon over the true woke Christian in all white. And I believe that. And I think that when we look at the narrative of Jesus and the suffering that he endured, right? There is a particular type of glory, I believe, that the suffering black Christian will experience in heaven.
Mm.
There is, like, when we look at the life of Jesus, there is a particular type of glory that slaves who serve Jesus, just think about that. Yeah. Who endured? They endured a cross.
It's very different.
It's a very different
cross. And you have to explain, yeah, because it almost sounded like you was like, you can start sounding like Nick Cannon for a second. It's like, wait a minute, are you trying to say that black people have like a better glory? But like,
no.
But when Paul says, no. I reckon that
the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared.
And what are the sufferings of this particular time?
Yeah,
and they look different.
They look different. And so I'm not saying that black people are going to be exalted.
Right.
In heaven more than white people.
Because at the end of the day, what's going to happen is you're going to get them crowns. And I remember one of my friends asked me, he was like, man, do you think that we're going to be, when we get to heaven, are we going to be jealous because somebody had a better crown than us or whatever? No. It was like, well, it doesn't matter because guess what? We're all going to be casting crowns.
Yeah.
Whatever crown you did get, you're going to throw it on the ground regardless. Yeah. So there still is a glorifying of one particular man who is Jesus.
Yeah. So when I wrote that line, it wasn't an attempt to tell black people, hey, we're gonna be better than people in heaven.
Just wait.
But it was an encouragement to tell people that do not think that we are accursed people. That I think later on in the poem I said that Jesus thought so much of us that he allowed us to share in his sufferings. Like for the Christian. Right. To know that anything that we experience, because God is our father, like as a father, I have two daughters. They cannot suffer and I don't suffer. They don't have to be suffering necessarily for my namesake.
Right.
For me to be suffering with them. Right.
That's
right.
Say it again.
So they don't have to be suffering for my namesake for me to be suffering with them.
Mm.
Right. So if you belong to God, if you have a hangnail, God is suffering because he's not just some God. He's a father. So just think about the Christians who are black and who are experiencing a particular type of suffering in this country. You don't think God, our father, is suffering with us? So I think that when we think about the suffering saint in this country, we just shouldn't, and that's the reason why when we start talking about the persecuted church, we have to start talking about the black church.
Absolutely.
Right? We have to start talking about the black church because the suffering saint is not just somebody who gets martyred for the faith. The suffering saint is anybody who suffers an injustice, and our Father in heaven, he's concerned and he cares and he's suffering with us as a father. You know what I'm saying? So I just think that man, like for that reason, that black Christians who endure suffering and injustice, like man, like a day is coming when Jesus will come and we will share in his glory in such a beautiful way. Such a beautiful way.
Yeah, we also have to talk about how it's not just that the black church is wrapped up within, when we talk about persecuted church, we have to talk about black church, but just when we talk about the church in general and what black people, what role they've played in church history.
Yes.
Oftentimes we don't talk about it or it's kind of glossed over. I remember, you know, being in seminary and learning of some really huge, you know, giants in the faith that I had no idea that they came from Africa. You know, like for instance, the concept of a triune God, the church has believed for a long time. It's been, for the most part, a consensus that the Bible teaches a triune God. But where we get the name Trinity and where it was first sort of argued and coined that, it's from an African man, Tertullian.
Teach us.
You know, and that's not some like, you know, peripheral thing of the Christian faith. That was argued sometime down the road or whatever, but rather black people, African people played a very integral role in understanding Christianity, even from a Western perspective, like St. Augustine. I didn't even know. We talk about, I learned about Augustine all the time. And when I found out, I was like, wait a minute, he was from Africa? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to just say that Tertullian, he defined the Trinity, I think before the Council of Nicaea.
Yeah, I forget the timeline on it. I want to say it was before or it was around, it was in that space. I don't want to quote, but even talking about the Council of Nicaea, we don't talk about how many Africans were actually
there
at the Council of Nicaea.
Yeah,
as well.
So a lot of black religions come. They come and say that the Council of Nicaea is where a lot of heresy, you know, formed our thinking, and they talk about Constantine and all of these things, but not like Tertullian defined the Trinity years before a lot of these so-called false doctrines in the Christian faith form, and it's like so he. Yeah, he shaped a lot of, he confirmed what the early church taught years before people.
That's one thing I want to get at. So I think sometimes people, you just gotta, I hate to use this word, do your homework, do your research. But I say in one of my early poems as a real thing, we say doubt your doubts. And I was talking about this even in my last, one of my recent podcasts about deconstructing faith. And we hear things about like, the Council of Nicaea really is where, you know, the Roman church kind of made what was going to happen. And it's a misunderstanding of what really happened at the Council of Nicaea. It really was a lot of church leaders coming to argue, about what the consensus was for a long time.
Like, what do we believe as a church?
Yeah, because I don't think there was a time. Talking about persecuted church. Ooh, that's such a great point for later. But the church early on, for the the Council of Nicaea doesn't happen until roughly 300 years after the resurrection of Christ. Mm-hmm. And the church largely up until that point was very, very persecuted. So there wasn't really time to write down systematically what we believe, what is the Trinity, what is salvation, what is it. This was a more so oral tradition. And written as well, but there wasn't really time to sit down and just contemplate, and write down in very systematic ways and formal ways of what the church believes. And so because the church was so persecuted, now what happens is, of course, Constantine does, the emperor, he does get a hold of Christianity later on.
Yeah.
And, then we start to see Christianity become more politicized. It has more formal power, and almost overnight, the Christian church turns from being the persecuted to like being like now you can really have some position of power.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother conversation in and of itself. But either way, there was a, now it's like we have time to really sit down and think about, okay, what do we really believe as a church? Interesting enough, though, that translates for the black Christian today as well, especially for black Christians who have been so, enthralled with theology or whatever. You think about the persecuted church in America and how white theology has always been heralded many times as the sort of, not heralded, but I mean, this is a suggestion. I felt it in very conservative white spaces that, white theology is the right theology.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the American theologians and Puritans and stuff like that, and European theologians had this time to really carve out what they believe. You start having a lot of these very great European American minds to spell out what Christians believe, your Jonathan Edwards, your George Whitfields and all that. And it's like, well, what were black Americans doing while they had all this time to come up with this theology?
That's a really good question. That's a really good question.
And they were getting a different type of theology.
Yeah.
They were understanding suffering, and they were getting a more front row seminary class with Jesus in a way that white Christians were not being able to spell out in their systematic theology. They were understanding the theology of suffering.
Yeah.
And that plays out even now when we go down the history, like when we, even now, bro, just look at our worship songs.
Yeah.
And the tradition of
yes,
white CCM songs
and black
songs. What is the theology? The theology comes down a sort of a heritage of, you think about a hymn like, I see the stars, I hear the rolling thunder, thy power throughout the universe.
It's all about how we,
then sings my soul, my yes, savior God to thee, how great thou art. And it's a very high theology
of how we view God.
Right. Yeah. And so you carry that heritage down and you hear these like very songs that are very, geared towards like high, like, yeah, songs about God in a very abstract, theological, sort of philosophical way. How great thou art, you know. But then what is the heritage of Black songs? Mm-hmm. You go down the line and you come up with stuff like, our most popular songs are Never Would Have Made It Without You.
Because we learn God through our suffering.
Bro, it's a different, and it's still that. Like, it's not, we're starting to see a little bit more crossover now, but still, it's starkly different of like, I've learned God through suffering.
Yes.
I can't tell you, I can't spell out the hypostatic union. I can't tell you talk about new textual criticism of the New Testament and how, you know, the translations of the Bible were made. I don't know. I just know that when I was in need and I was suffering and I couldn't get my bills paid somehow,
teach us.
Jesus came through, and that is my theology.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not a theology that is more wrong.
Yeah.
Nor is it a theology that is less powerful.
Yes. And the reason why we're so expressive is because slaves couldn't read. We had to learn, like you said, the word of God through verbal communication, right? So we verbalized and we sung songs, and a lot of people heard the gospel through songs and through prayers or whatever, and you know, and stuff like that. So what you just said was a lot of good things. I think this last past year, I have had so many conversations with Black people who've just been struggling with their faith and struggling, what do they do with their faith, and have all these questions that they then heard from Hebrew Israelites, like, what did the Council of Nicaea do? Like, what did Constantine do? And I think when you talk about Constantine, I think in a lot of ways, like, he made it so, you know, the church can be tax-free and all of these things, right? But when you look at the history of Christianity, there's unlike Hebrew Israelites, or unlike the Jehovah's Witness faith, unlike all of these other faiths, there isn't a leader that you can trace back that's unlike Jesus. Like, basically, what I'm trying to explain is, in Jehovah's Witnesses, you trace back their leader, Charles Taze Russell. That's a man. If that man didn't exist, that religion wouldn't exist. The Hebrew Israelites, people don't talk about William Cody or whatever in the 1800s, who had this epiphany that the Black man was the lost children of Israel or whatever. And then so he went on this quest. And that's how the Hebrew Israelites started in the 1800s. But when you look at Christianity, there's no denying that Jesus is our God. There's no one.
Cutting out the middleman.
Yeah. You cut out the middleman. Like, and so I think for the saint who's struggling with, is Christianity the right thing? There's nobody to really trace back in our history. Constantine didn't create. He just came and confirmed what was already.
Yeah. And he wielded it for his own power, but that's a whole other conversation.
Yes, he did.
Do Europeans use Christianity for their own power? Yes, but that's not the question at hand.
And that was my next point. So I think what happened is we've allowed what white men did with this beautiful history throughout history, and we try to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
We try to say, you know what, the white man has taken this word of God and corrupted it, so it must not be true. Mm. And it's like, no, we can't allow what somebody did with this beautiful word to make it not be true. It's still true.
Yeah.
And so I think in a lot of ways, I think that it is really good for the Black Christian to start to figure out ways in which they can, deconstruct their faith in healthy ways.
Yeah.
And not, if you don't want to embrace this westernized type of Christianity, don't think that you're not a Christian because you don't want to do so.
Yeah.
That the Bible in a lot of ways, not in a lot of ways, in all ways, should shape what we think about God, but we have been whitewashed.
Yeah.
Christianity has been whitewashed in this country.
Yeah.
And so don't allow anybody to make you think that just because you don't want to learn in white spaces, just because you don't want to sing white worship style songs, just because you don't want to listen to John Piper,
right,
and you want to listen to Eric Mason or Charlie Dates, that you're not a Christian. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't let them think that culture is your culture is not of God.
Right.
And so I think that the Black Christian has to do the hard work of really wrestling with not throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
That our culture, that in a lot of ways, America and just Western culture has demonized as unbiblical.
Yeah.
It's not true.
Yeah, I think you got to wrestle your way back to the resurrection, and then you can figure out everything else later. It's like, yo, did Jesus really die? Did he really rise from the grave? I think that question, for a lot of different things, solves or at least gives you a foundation to move up from. And so I was mentioning this the other day on a live stream. I was saying the questions we have to ask is, one, who is Jesus? Who do you believe Jesus is? Two, who do you believe Jesus believed he is? And what does Jesus believe about the Bible? Those three questions right there really lay a foundation to move upward. And it gives you a space to really ask genuine questions. But I think if you start messing with the upper stuff first, and you can get caught in the weeds of what's not really the most important thing.
Yeah.
And I remember one of my friends, well, really a family member on my Facebook, had posted a post. He said, I think it was like a meme that said, question, who were black people praying to before slavery? Or I think he said, who were Africans or something like that? Yeah, black people were before slavery, basically saying we're Africans, you know, kind of suggesting that we should go back to some, you know, native African religion.
Right. Yeah.
And I was like, to your question, I was like, well, it depends, you know, who were black people praying to? Who were black people worshiping before? It depends on what part of Africa you're talking about.
Yeah.
We have this idea that somehow black people have always been a monolith of religion, that we've all agreed on
everything.
Who is the God of the black people?
I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah.
It's not true.
It's not true. It's like, it depends on what part of Africa.
Yeah. Because Ethiopia, like the Ethiopian church was very instrumental in worshiping and in serving Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely. We have the Ethiopian eunuch, recorded, you know, even in the scriptures before we even start talking about just extra biblical history. But not only that though, I said, man, you have to think of it this way. Even if you just look at a map and you see where, if Judaism starts in the Middle East and spreads out, there's no social media, there's no boats, there's no planes. News travels through feet.
Yeah.
Not over Wi-Fi.
Right.
It travels through feet.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, just look at a map and you see the natural trajectory before we even get to bodies of water, whatever. Like, how does word spread? Well, it spreads by feet. The gospel gets to Africa. It also gets to Europe at some point. You know, we have, you know, Rome and so forth like that, but it's also getting to Africa as well. Now we have a white version of Christianity that develops in European spaces and then makes its way back around to West Africa and imposes that white supremacist version of Christianity on West Africa. We have chattel slavery and all that, whatever it may be. But kind of to your point earlier, if you think that Christianity is a white man's religion, that thought in and of itself is a result of really successful white supremacy.
It is. Because that's exactly what their goal was.
It's let you know, like, God came to dark-skinned people, brown-skinned people first, but what we're going to do, I said, man, is that not gentrification?
Yeah.
A space that was for dark-skinned people, white people came in and said, oh, this has always been our space.
Yes.
Y'all can live here if you want to, but only on our terms.
Not only has it always been ours when it wasn't. I think the gospel was for the whole world, but you were created to serve us,
right?
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And we have the right to oppress you,
right?
Because you're not more human than us. Like, you know, so it was just lies. And so that's a really, really good point. Can I ask you a question though? To that I want to ask you earlier.
Yeah.
about the division part.
I forgot about that.
Because I hear a lot of people. I hear a lot of people who say that, and sometimes I hear it from very healthy perspectives, and sometimes I hear it from very unhealthy perspectives. Mm. But I don't totally disagree with the ideology of division, but I think that it has to be, yeah, look a certain way. So I would just love to hear your opinion on that.
Man, a scripture I bring up often, when Paul is in, I believe it was in 2 Corinthians, when he's addressing division in the church, and you know, it's over, they were wild, and the Corinthians were wilding over communion and stuff like that or whatever. And there's a little past sort of a part of the scriptures you can sort of overlook as he's talking about this as sort of like a side thought. He says, though I know there must be, depending on what version you read, I know there must be factions among you to prove who's genuine. I know there must be divisions among you. He said, though I know, he's addressing a division. What he doesn't want is a division that is unholy and that shows partiality, that subjects people, that it leaves people on the outskirts. That is a sort of satanic division. Mm. But he says, I know that there must be factions among you to prove who's genuine. I'm like, what? What is that? And you think about it, he said, there has to be some kind of disagreement. If we're like, there has to be some sort of pushing back to prove who is genuine. Because if wrong ideology comes in and nobody challenges it, then how do we know who's really genuine and who's really authentic?
We're just kind of living amongst each other.
He's like, okay, well, I don't think that's right. But if you said it, I don't want to be divisive, so I'll let it slide. And he's like, no. If no one challenges that, then we don't see who's inauthentic.
Yeah.
So if someone comes in with some old mess, with some old filth, and there's not a challenge, then you can let that stuff spread and it goes unchecked. So there has to be some kind of division among you to prove who's genuine. There has to be some kind of division, not unnecessary division, a good division. Mm-hmm. There has to be a good challenging among you to prove who is really real. And so that's my thing. And I know social media makes it very hard because that division can be done without, again, the social context. It can be a very theological, philosophical, abstract, intellectual sparring that you're doing with a screen name, that you're doing with an Instagram handle, and you're not doing it with a real person like we're doing and sitting, I'm looking in your eyes.
Yeah.
Because the division that I have with Preston Perry in real life is going to look much different, because it's like, man, I got to look you in the face and say what I really think about you.
Yeah.
But online, it's like, I can say whatever I want to.
Yeah.
That division, you know what I'm saying? So it gets really tricky online. But when we're in these spaces as Christians, we can't say that all division is bad division. Because is that not what Jesus is going to do at some point, separating the wheat from the tare? He's going to create division to prove who is genuine and who is not.
Yeah.
And we have to move in that space as Christians as well, in a healthy way, in a loving way. But I think the problem is, I think sometimes we want division. We want to create that division and push back online in a way that's like people that you don't know. And I think that's where it gets dangerous. I'd rather have these types of factions. Because again, when Paul was making this challenge, he was giving it in the context of a house church, of churches, of people who were doing life together. And he said, I know there must be divisions among you to prove he's genuine. It gets really hazy when you try to apply that in a one-to-one scenario to online. Because now it's like, well, I don't really walk with you like that, though.
Absolutely.
Dog.
Yeah, you're not even in my local community. I don't know. You probably had dead bodies in your basement like now.
I don't know.
I don't know.
But you telling me.
Telling me what I should do.
Yeah. It gets real tricky.
And that's what I be telling people, man. Like, in a lot of ways, we cannot look at social media to be real. Not saying all of it is fake. It's just like, but it's a difference. God gave us local communities for a reason. But no, I agree. That's why I wanted to ask your opinion, because I value your opinion, and I totally agree. And you talked about, you know, Jesus separating the wheat from the tares, but that's exactly what he said in his word when he said, you know, don't think that I came here to bring peace on everybody. And I come to bring peace with a sword. I come to set a mother against a daughter, a father against his son, a mother-in-law against a daughter-in-law, and a man enemy would be those of his own household. I think what Jesus is saying is like, yo, like, my Christianity and my coming is really destructive in the sense of that I'm going to divide people who think that they're for me from the people who are really for me.
Yeah.
For the people who really think they serve a God of justice, and I'm going to show you that these people don't really care about justice, nor do they care about their neighbor. You know what I mean? And I think that healthy divide has to happen. You know what I'm saying? And but that, it just has to look healthy.
Yeah. And again, as a particular, it gets, it's only, you have to take it with a grain of salt when you're online. Because it's like, it's tricky. But at the same time, you want to, especially as people who have some, a following, an audience or whatever that may value your thoughts, you want to be very careful with your words. And I'm not always the most careful with my words. Lord, help me be more careful with my words, which is why I've sort of avoided social media in a lot of ways and why I've really loved the podcast setting, because I feel like you're able to have a bit more nuanced of a conversation with people who you know. And I hope this is encouraging to people to have conversations with people that you know, or at least get to know people in a space that you can have conversations. Because like I was having a conversation on my last podcast episode with Will, we're talking about queerness or whatever, and queerness in Christianity, and some people didn't like the way the conversation went because they're used to conversations of what it should look like in a debate setting or on social media, and you got to challenge people and say this and this and this and this.
Yeah.
These are the points that you should make. And I'm like, I hope this is at least giving people the encouragement to say, sit down and talk to people and have a genuine conversation. And you're not here to just bring up really cool points or make sure you challenge them on this. It's like, you got to talk to them. And I think that's what you bring up in your apologetics approach, whether you're actually doing it yourself or when you're, talking to people, doing workshops and stuff. It's like, it's not so much. Jesus had the luxury of knowing people's hearts from the jump.
Yeah.
So he can do apologetics in a much different way because it's like, all right, know your heart and I can judge it accurately. We have to be a bit more tactful and understanding that I really don't be knowing people like that. So I got to ask questions.
I want to just challenge people who one, are probably listening to this podcast, and then people who listen to the podcast with you and Will and who had these questions about, like, why didn't you ask him, this and why you asked him that. I mean, the last video I put on my channel, Bold TV, I did a video with a lady who worships her ancestors, and so many people thought that I should have hit her with this theological question, that theological question. But to your point, I think that Jesus, he did have the luxury of knowing people's hearts, right? But even the Jesus and all the knowledge that he had, him being 100% God and 100% man, he never came with 5 points that he wanted to bring. He always asked questions, and those questions allow people to come up with their own conclusion about their hearts. And I think that's the beauty of Jesus's questions. Jesus wasn't asking questions to know.
To learn something.
To learn something, right? Or he wasn't trying to stomp him in an argument or trying to shut him down. But no, like he when he asked the woman at the well, where's your husband? He knew what he was asking, right? He wanted her to come up with the conclusion, like, you know what? Like, I did have 5 of them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I think what you did with Will is beautiful apologetics. One, because you have a relationship with him, you guys know each other. But also, two, we allow people to see our worldview and come up with their own conclusion about their hearts. But we also get to know people.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, somebody will go in a situation with a Will, for an example, and they'll come with 5 points and don't even really know his name all the way for real. You know what I'm saying? And so now this person feels like a project and not a person.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And that's not real apologetics. That's not that when the Bible tells us to always be prepared to defend the what we believe, but it goes on to say, but do it with gentleness and respect and with honor. so those who revile your good behavior in Christ may be put to shame. Like, that's what it means. Yeah. So I think that that wasn't apologetic. Like, and even in y'all natural conversation, you asking questions and you stating your position and so forth and so on, I think it was beautiful.
Yeah.
You know? And you guys don't have to say, I disagree, or this is wrong, and that is, you don't have to do that.
Yeah. You know, your greatest apologetic, man, at the end of the day, because I don't believe that apologetics, nor do I believe doubt, is purely an intellectual exercise. Like, it's so much more than just like, we reduce people down to, oh, I hear what you're saying. That sounds like this philosophy or this religion. So, all right, no, you're like, let's. I'm gonna narrow it down
to this. The culmination of what we've studied and stuff.
Yeah. So they become this, like you said, a project and not a person. And what we're missing is that the questions that people have and the doubts that they have, whatever it may be, and we know that for ourselves, you getting the right answers, the right intellectual answers, is not gonna solve all your problems. It's also mixed in with your experience, and you don't know what people's experience is until you ask them. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times they have experiential problems with God. It's not simply intellectual problems with God. They have an existential, man, this happened to me, and because of this happened, or somebody did this to me or whatever, I can't get with God. Mm-hmm. Or my blackness was challenged in this way, or it was degraded in this way, and because of that, I can't get down with this white religion. It's not simply the intellectual argument. It's also my experience has been bad.
Wow.
You know, that's good. And so you have to address the experience. And so Jesus also says that this is how they'll know who I am, who you are, that you love the brothers. This your love is an apologetic towards them and towards each other.
That's what I was just about to say. That is an apologetic. Because if the main scripture that we have when apologetics is 1 Peter 3:15, and it tells us to defend the gospel or whatever, and everybody has the apologia right, the apologia, like the defense down. So we go into these conversations with just the mindset that I have to defend, and we look at people like enemies, and so we talk to them like enemies, or you know what I mean, or opposition. But no, like, that whole passage is surrounded around conduct, behavior, gentleness, respect. And so in the beginning of the passage, 1 Peter 3:15, it says, in your hearts of hearts, honor Christ the Lord as holy. And then it goes on to say, always being prepared to make a defense for the reason why you
starting believe. Point is Jesus, the not your argument.
Yes. The starting point is honoring of a heart that is holy. You know what I'm saying? Honoring God is holy. And then it goes, always be prepared to make a defense, the defense part. And then it goes into conduct with gentleness and respect. And so I think that Jesus knows that when we go into these conversations, we have to defend what we believe for our own sake, for guarding our own faith. But the gentleness and respect part comes for their faith. Like, it comes for the sake of their souls. Like, if we go into situations and not caring about the heart of the person, right? So when I do Bold TV episodes, I'm not thinking about just the people who are watching this, right, in their faith.
Right.
But I cannot think about y'all and neglect the heart that's in front
right
of me.
In front of you, dog.
And neglect the soul that's in front of me. So when I'm talking to the Mormon, that's the reason why I told them. It's like, I love you. And I love you. Like, this is not me trying to stump an argument to show my people that y'all have a false religion.
Right.
This is for the sake of defending the faith. But I'm also, I also care about your soul. And I'm, so, you know, every time you think that I'm trying to embarrass you or put you to shame, I want to stop. Yeah. And I want to, if I had to reiterate a million times that I love you, I'm going to do so. And I think that if we have that mind frame, that we will see that when Jesus tells us in Matthew 28 to make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, that all nations, he's literally saying all peoples. It literally means all peoples in the Greek. And that means people who have different worldviews. That means the Hebrew Israelite and the Jehovah's Witness and the Mormon. Like making disciples out of them looks different, but it still has to be approached with a gentleness, a love, and a respect if we're going to reach them in our disagreement. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And that's an apologetic. And I think for the person who wants to be or the inspired apologist who goes into a situation and has these 19 theological points that you want to bring into this argument with this person who's probably hungry or probably grew up hungry or probably had a bad experience and don't understand that even in John 9, when Jesus heals the blind man, the disciples ask him, you know, Jesus, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he's born blind? And Jesus goes on to say, neither his parents nor he sinned, but he was born blind so that the glory of God would be revealed in his life. Jesus healed this man of physical blindness, and then later on in the passage, he comes back and asks the same man, do you know who the Son of Man is? Do you know who the Son of God is? And the man goes, no, I don't know who the Son of Man is. Tell me so that I can worship him. And then Jesus says, for I'm the one that you're speaking to. And then that's when the man fell down and worshiped Jesus. And I think that story is so beautiful because it shows us this picture of Jesus meeting this man's physical blindness needs before he met his spiritual. Mm. And a lot of times we don't think apologetics is that way. Mm. Right? And so the Pharisees was right there and was like, Jesus, what are we blind to? And then Jesus says, no, you're not blind, because if you were blind, you will be innocent. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt will remain. So Jesus is displaying this salvific work in front of all of these people. But before he did that, before he gave this man catered to this man's spiritual needs, he first healed this man of physical blindness. When he was sitting outside the synagogue begging for all of his life, he was born this way. You know what I'm saying? And so when we think about apologetics, our apologetics has to be that way. Social justice is an apologetic, right?
It is.
It is. We cannot think that our lack of, that our silence about black issues are not going to work against us when
it's
we
an
go
argument
into,
against Christianity.
Yeah, when we go into black communities telling them about Jesus. Yeah. When I was growing up in the hood, I didn't want to hear about a God who didn't care about my suffering. I didn't want to hear about a God who didn't care about.
I need to be able to see it. Don't right. just tell me he cared about my son. Like,
I got friends who come into school just to eat the free lunch.
Yeah.
Because they so poor.
Yeah.
It's like if the Hebrew Israelites care about us more, I want to hear about their God.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So our love for people is an apologetic. Yeah. So we have to, I think, reshape the way we think about apologetics and how we serve people, for real.
Yo, that wraps it up for this episode of the Flights and Feelings podcast. Thank y'all so much for tuning in. I know we missed last week. A lot was happening. I ran out of Wi-Fi. Like it's something that you can use up like some cereal or something. My Wi-Fi was out for a week and some change, and it just made things really annoying. So I'm just glad to be back at it now. We're still on schedule. Next week will be an episode with my friend John Amuchekwa talking about unimpressiveness of life. It's a really great conversation that people on Patreon have already heard, actually, because they got to see it recorded live. And that's something I think I want to do in the future when I bring on guests. I would love to let people see the behind the scenes of how we record these podcasts. So if you want to see that happen, you can definitely join the Sky Club on Patreon at patreon.com/whatisjoedoing. Thank y'all so much once again for tuning in. You could be going anywhere in the world, but you're right here. So thank you for choosing the Flights and Feelings podcast. Remember to always fly home.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Atlanta, where the local time is 10:46 a.m. For your safety and the safety of those around you, please remain seated with your seatbelt fastened and keep the aisles clear until we are parked at the gate.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.